solo adventure awaits you.
This is Solo Travel Talk. Your solo travel advisor is Astrid Clements.
Slow travel made a bit of an introduction in our recent Timing is Everything episode, episode 17, and we thought it deserved a little more discussion. On this episode of Solo Travel Talk, Astrid touts the positives of setting down temporary routes on your next trip. To refresh listeners' memories, can you do a little compare and contrast of fast travel versus slow travel?
Okay, well, I'll start with an example because I think that paints the picture of, you know, the comparison. Imagine yourself booking a trip 6 weeks in France. Now, doesn't that sound wonderful? Versus 2 weeks in France, 2 weeks in Italy, 1 week in Spain, and 1 week in Greece. That's basically the comparison between a slow travel trip and a multi-destination trip that's a fast travel trip. Okay, so it's really two different styles of travel. Fast travel, you stay in a few days in one place, you cram as many activities as possible while you're there. You know, it's kind of country hopping, city hopping. And most people do this when they travel to Europe, United States, Latin America, Southeast Asia. You know, there's so many things to do, and they just feel like, oh, God, I want to see Las Vegas. I want to go to New York. I want to go to Miami, Hollywood. I mean, they're just all over, okay? That's fast travel. Slow travel, though, is when you immerse yourself in the culture of a place by staying there for at least a week or more. Say if you just want to go to Venice, like I did in September. 8 days in Venice, fabulous. You know, it's a whole different kind of mindset. And a lot of people go to Venice for 2 days. They say, I've been to Venice 2 days, 3 days at the most, which, oh, I think that's just, oh, it's like, it's like a sin. But, you know, slow travel, you do less activities every day. You seek to connect with the locals, kind of, you know, get the feel of the place, the rhythm of the place, maybe practice a little of the language. Definitely tend to get off the beaten path more. You're not just hitting the sights. You'll just, you know, walk this way and kind of get lost and get back and maybe stop at this random gelato cafe and people watch while you're, you know, just refueling your batteries. But it really is a whole different kind of thing rather than checking this, that, and the other off of your list. Your goal is to absorb the culture for a deeper and more rich travel experience. So that's really, that's kind of the whole perspective on slow travel. Now, there's a long-standing debate with what type of travel is better. You know, and I really personally feel like both kinds are good. Me as an older traveler now with more experience, I like the slow travel a lot more because I've traveled so much and I really like to delve deep. But there's nothing wrong with fast travel either. But there are a lot of things that depend on whether you take a slow travel or a fast travel trip. First of all, just basically, how much time do you have? How many vacation days do you have? You know, and what's your goal? I mean, if you only have a week, you have to decide whether do I want to go one place for a week and really, say, take a cooking course and really get into a particular place. Or do I want to try to do three cities in a week or whatever? So you have to know how many days you have to do it, whether you can actually do slow travel, okay? Some of it, too, depends on your personality. Some people just don't want to be bored, and they think by staying in one place for 2 weeks, oh, God, they'll just be so bored. They like a lot of change. They want difference. I mean, that's, you know, play hard, work hard, play hard. So fast travel is something that's what their personality is geared towards. Then also your travel experience. I think the first time travelers tend to want fast travel because they want to see it all. They want to check off their bucket list, etc. The older you get, you've done a lot of that and you tend to want slow travel more. The bottom line is I think most people end up taking both types of trips. And it just depends on a lot of different factors and where you are in terms of your travel style likes and dislikes. And a lot of times on the place itself, you know, a place will lend itself to staying longer than not. So to kind of get into this a little bit deeper, I'm going to give you a quick comparison of, you know, fast travel and slow travel. Pros and cons. Some of it is obviously just common sense logic, but I'm going to go through them quickly just to kind of really hone in on what it is to travel slow and what it is to travel fast and where the pros are in the cons in each of this type of travel. So fast travel, never a dull moment. You know, there's been a lot written about the first 48 hours when you go to a new place. It's just so exhilarating. I mean, somewhat of a culture shock, but I know most all travelers who like to travel, that anticipatory, you know, leaving your home, getting on the plane, and then, you know, approaching that airport, landing, getting out in a new place, the first 2 days, oh, it's like, I mean, it really is exhilarating. So if you only stay there 2 or 3 days, you get a lot of these feelings, okay? Then also, here again, you just get a brief overview of the place. You have a tourist perspective. You don't have time to have a deeper perspective. You just get a real introduction to a specific location, see some of the significant sites, eat, you know, etc. And you kind of know a little bit about it. This type broadens your horizon. I mean, you know, it's not on a deep level, but you do, your horizons are broadened. And what this kind of travel does really, I think, is it whets your appetite for more travel. If you like a particular place, you'll want to come back. I mean, I know I've been back to Berlin I don't know how many times. Now, I have family that still live there, but there's certain places that you like to go and you just return and you return and you delve deeper and deeper into it. So, you know, if you go to a place and you just go, oh, this is me, or I just love this place, you'll come back to it, okay? Cons, exhausting. This kind of travel is exhausting. You get a superficial experience on these kinds of trips. Really no deep connection because you don't have time. Packing and unpacking, packing and unpacking. Let me tell you, the older you get, you cannot stand it. The younger travelers, you know, there's a reason why there's a big backpacking thing, which I, you know, obviously that's not what my approach to travel is all about. But there are virtues to that if you want to do this kind of travel. Okay, so if you don't have a lot of suitcases, you're lugging around and all that. But the packing and the unpacking and just all of the logistics of this kind of travel, extremely stressful. And, you know, you have to be in shape for this. You have to want to do this, basically. Also, you can get overwhelmed. If you go to so many different cities, like they've got tours in Europe, you go to 12 countries and, you know, 15 days or whatever. By the 10th day, you don't want to see another cathedral. You know, you can't remember what you saw, you know, 5 days ago, and you're just like completely overwhelmed. And that happens a lot, you know, especially to people who are first-time travelers. So you don't want to lose interest. That's kind of a real bummer. It's like if you get to the end of something, then you go, I don't even feel, I'm staying in the hotel room. Now, you know, that has not been the right approach. You don't get enough time to get through the culture shock. And this is a little bit of what I'm saying in the jet lag. you know, a lot of people don't realize whenever they go to a new place, there is a slight culture shock, you know, because you're taking it all in. And if you don't get through it, certain things will get on your nerves. Like you'll see things that might not be as tidy as they should, or you're not so sure if you feel comfortable with the way the people are talking. Maybe you're a little bit scared or something. I mean, you know, there are all kinds of subconscious things that go on that you don't realize. But if you stay in a place and get through that, you don't even notice any of that stuff. I mean, that's just, you know, you've become acclimated to the place. And that's very important in travel in order to really absorb somewhere and enjoy it and understand it. Slow travel. Now, slow travel, I really do think for the most part is for the seasoned traveler, because they're the traveler who has seen so much or has done a lot of traveling, and they know that they didn't have enough time to do what they wanted to really do in certain places. So they make a point now of slow travel. And, you know, this is for people who really want to connect with a place on a deeper level. They want to understand the culture, the people, history, food. They want to make friends. They want to kind of immerse themselves to where, like, they could live here, or they get into the rhythm of the place. This type of travel, I really do believe, gives you much more vivid memories and much more payback for your travel. You know, if you take the time to really learn about the culture, and say you take a cooking course or whatever, say in Italy, you'll come back and I guarantee you, you might start arranging flowers like you saw in Italy, or you'll change the color scheme in a room because you really liked what you saw in Italy, and your pasta that you cook will be so great now. Yeah, so this is what you learn in slow travel. Fast travel, you don't have time for all that. You might see some nice colors or see this, but you don't really, you don't get as much joy on certain simpler things and everything because you don't have time to absorb it. Now, and really, before I go into the cons, the perspective is quality of activities worth versus quantity. For Americans, it's very hard to do this because we're so used to a fast-paced life. And most everywhere in the world, they're not like that. So I think this is also kind of a shock to a lot of Americans. But it's good to do. It really is good to do. And I find older retired people are doing that because they have the time and they don't want as much stress or what, you know, blah, 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 for all these reasons. Cons in this kind of travel, you might get bored. Here again, you might feel like, oh, God, I've done everything here. But if you get bored, you should question yourself. Why are you getting bored? Are you getting bored because you're just missing a lot, or you're not allowing yourself to really be open in seeing things that really are there? You know, you don't really know. But some people find this after a while boring, become homesick. There's a certain limit, too, of how long you can stay away from home and not hit that homesick brick wall. It happens to everybody. And I find it 3 weeks is typically when you hit it the first time. 10 days, you start to get it. But it after 3 weeks, I mean, you're thinking, oh, I want my bed, my coffee that I make in the morning and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, you got that element of homesickness if you stay a long time. But you can get through it. I mean, you know, their coping skills, etc. And it's a lot of times it just takes just a little bit of just pushing through it, and you'll be surprised. You'll be ready to go and absorb yourself in something else that you want to. Unaffordable, a lot of people, they really just don't want to spend this much money away from home for this length of time. They only have a certain amount of dollars that they want to allocate to travel. In most people, I mean, in my travel genre, they want to do it nice on a nice level, and they're not willing to spend all that money, okay? So it can be unaffordable. And, you know, here again, for Americans, it might not be exciting enough. You know, they just get tired of sitting in the cafes. Yeah, so there's some cons to this kind of travel, and it really is a mindset.
I like that you and I really like talking about mindset. A couple of mindset things really stand out to me in this discussion, and I shared with you off mic after the timing episode. I know that for me, when part of the mentality of fast travel, especially when I was younger, was, I might never ever get back here, so I have to see everything I can, that there was this urgency and the sense that I was not going to be able to revisit a particular place. But I know that you have more mindset thoughts about slow travel.
I want to give you a little bit of a background on how all this evolved, because I think this is important to what people are struggling with now, even in their daily lives, with all of this fast-paced change in technology and all of the responsibilities that everybody has, and their challenges and trying to have a quality of life, etc. So I think it plays into this slow travel mindset as an alternative that kind of helps you recenter and feel alive, you know, rather than just having to, meet deadlines, etc. But this travel movement evolved out of the slow food movement. Now, this is very interesting,
really?
I think. And it started in the 1980s in Italy, and supposedly it was an outcry of the opening of a McDonald's in Rome. I mean, the Italians thought that is the end of civilization. You know, no fast food in Italy. So there was a big, just kind of like a backlash to it. And this slow food movement evolved out of the coming of fast food to Europe. And the goal of this slow food movement was to preserve and support regional cuisine, local farming, traditional food preparation and recipes, and partaking in communal meals. Now, we know in the United States how our whole focus has shifted on organics, on cooking well, cooking with fresh produce, locally made, farm-to-table restaurants. So this slow movement, slow lifestyle, slow travel all started out of this reaction, and supposedly in Italy with the McDonald's. But from there, it goes into, here again, how you live your life and then how you travel. And in travel, it emphasizes connections or experiences with people and culture. You know, we've talked about it. I shared, you know, what we've talked already in this episode. But you really want to connect and have experiences with the people and culture. You just don't want to go to a place and see the top 10 sites, okay? So the philosophy, it's more important to get to know a place well than it is to see a little snippet of many different places. So 2-hour communal lunch or dinner versus the fast food hamburger. And that's really the bottom line of slow travel versus fast travel. Are you going to have to compromise and have a fast food hamburger? Or you're not willing to compromise and you want to have a nice meal and eat it properly, it be something that has made your day nice. And the French and the Italians, that is the staple, the kind of first basic thing to their whole mindset and culture. And I think it is wonderful. And so you don't see as many Starbucks and all these places there, which is refreshing. And I don't want to say anything bad about fast food because Starbucks I love. Mm. But, you know, it's nice, too, to experience it in the way that it used to be. And it's still there.
Well, kind of like what you're saying, it's like it depends. That's really what you're getting, what I'm hearing from you, is that like sometimes fast travel is appropriate, sometimes slow travel is appropriate, sometimes fast food is appropriate, sometimes two-hour lunches is appropriate. It's kind of like you want to have everything in moderation, and it just like different things fit different situation and recognizing that.
Yes, and then if you do one too much versus the other, maybe the balance isn't correct.
Things get thrown out of whack. That's the way that happens. Yeah.
Yeah, and I want to say one other thing about the slow travel mindset, and I kind of touched on it, but it really does force you to kind of look at your relationship to time. And I know that sounds, you know, kind of, you know, out there, but we're just used to rush, get things done, blah, blah, blah. Never enough time. The slow travel or slow movement philosophy or outlook to time is I'll make the time for what is important to me. I'll make it, and I'll make it happen, versus I don't have enough time to do that, I'll just only do this. So it's about slowing down so we're not so focused primarily on amassing a lot of experiences, but on acquiring more enrichment from each experience. And that's really important, and that's hard, or it's a challenge for a lot of Americans, because that's not their habit. But I do think this movement is catching on more and more. I think that more and more people are wanting to jump off the grid, to kind of there's so much like wellness travel now, and a lot of different things. And it's not just spa. It's into, you know, things, self-development and everything that really makes you slow down and look at things hard rather than just thinking about it, making it a list of how I'm going to conquer it and then do it. Yeah, no, I mean, this is really like grappling with it in getting to the next level. I think that all of this is kind of like also in what's happening with social evolution. You know, we're going real fast in certain ways, but we're also knowing that we can't do this all the time. We're gonna, you know, might get sick or self-destruct or something, have an accident, you know, whatever. I mean, there has to be a balance there. And I think this slow travel is one way to kind of to help you with that. And I want to go just to a little bit about my particular experience, because it kind of is a hybrid of fast and slow travel, and kind of puts a little bit more of a, I guess you'd say, a framework about what I've talked about. My first experience with traveling really came as, I shouldn't say it. My first was my father loved to travel, and I was so lucky because he did it with some of his business ventures in profession, is he would take my sister and I with him a lot of different places. So my first fabulous experience was Miami when I was 9 years old, when Miami Beach was like, oh, just the most glamorous place in the whole wide world. The Eden Rock Hotel, Fountain Blue, I forgot the other hotel we stayed in, but let me tell you something. That I thought, man, this is the life. When I get older, I want to have fur coats. Yeah. I mean, everything was so glamorous. But the bottom line is it started my interest that, oh, there's another world out there. There's so many things that are different from what I'm used to, and I want to learn about that, see that, see what I like, and all that kind of stuff. So, but the real first trip solo that I took was when I was in college as a exchange student, or basically Lufthansa had a program where they placed college students in work positions, and this was all to foster German, your German language skills as well as German immersion, etc. And so I did that, which forced me to live in Nuremberg for, I think it was 8 weeks. And I was a freshman in my summer year, after my freshman year. And I tell you, now that was a slow travel trip. That was my first trip. That was tough because I hit the homesickness wall. I hit the language barrier wall, the cultural shock wall, being alone. I mean, the whole thing. But I tell you, it was a fabulous experience. And it set the die for me to like slow travel, because I really got to understand the German culture more, especially in this area. I felt German. I could speak German. I was working. I mean, it gave me a lot of confidence and freedom. And then also, I would take small trips to Salzburg, to Vienna, to Zurich, to Bamberg, Würzburg, all over during the the Romantic Road area of Germany during the weekends. And so I did a little fast travel on the weekends. So I kind of got a snippet of all these other places that were very different from Nuremberg, to actually living in Nuremberg. So I got a slow travel and a fast travel mix, which it just really did. It set it in my psyche that I want to go around the world, every continent, learn about all the different cultures. I just think it's just so invigorating. I'm just one of these people. Some people could care less, but I love it. Then when once I was married, my husband and I did a lot of traveling together and apart that, was because of business. So we would only have a couple of days here and there. So after the meetings, I'd go to the art museum, I'd go shopping, I'd do anything that I thought was really special to the place. So I got a lot of fast travel in that. And that whet my appetite even more. And taught me a lot, too, about how to approach fast travel and, how really to do it effectively. Because here again, when you do fast travel, rather than seeing all the different sites, you ought to try to just focus in on an area, like whether it's art or, something specific. It's better. So what if you miss one or two churches that, are very important, but you might have gotten more out of if you just focused on a couple of museums and a couple of nice restaurants and a little shopping. You know what I'm saying? Rather than trying to do it all. But that's still fast travel. Then now since I've been retired, I have the time to slow travel. So I've done 8 days in Venice, 10 days in Paris. I went around the world. Finally, my dream trip. 50 days, 7 destinations, a week in each place. So it really was kind of slow travel in each place. So I love slow travel. Now, that's really where my focus is. Now, I'll still do fast travel because, some trips really do, they lend themselves to fast travel. I mean, say you want to go on a beach vacation and you have a week or 10 days. Now, are you going to go to the Bahamas for 10 days versus Nice, France? You go to Nice, France, you've got a lot of, you have the beach, but you've got great food. You've got all these wonderful Artists live there, and beautiful architecture, and it's completely different than a Bahamas experience. Nothing to take away from Bahamas, but if you have 10 days and you want to go to the beach, pick the right beach. You know, because after a while you get sick of all those piña coladas. So that's, you know, that's kind of, I guess you'd say, my thoughts on what I've experienced and what I like or what I'm doing now. And really because I'm more experienced and I'm older and I have the ability to do it.
Do you have any tips for organizing a slow travel trip that might be different than some of the tips you might give for other kinds of just normal travel trip organization?
Okay, well, first of all, you have to decide whether you're going to be solo and traveling in a small tour group or whatever, or if you're going to go totally solo yourself and create your own trip, okay? If you want to go solo and do it with a small group or whatever, you need to get on the internet and look at these sites. National Geographic has some good things that could be a little bit expensive because they've got that single supplement in most all of their trips. I like a particular website called the serendipitytraveler.com. It's a woman who has created this whole slow travel, authentic type of trips that are geared to solo travelers with small groups. I think that, you know, look for those types. And I don't want to go into all of that, but there are trips that you will see that are geared to the solo traveler that aren't too expensive, that will give you this slow travel, some of the cooking classes, et cetera, you know, cooking or food, et cetera. But if you want to do it purely slow travel, solo, by yourself, which I've done a lot of, I'm going to go into my slow travel trips for the solo traveler. I don't have that many, but I have a few that are 10 that are basic, you know, to it. So I'm going to go through those real quickly, and then we'll wrap it up. First of all, pick your destination wisely, just like I talked about. You know, you want to have a place where there's many aspects of the culture that you're interested in that you can explore. So I talked about the beach. If you want somewhere on the beach or somewhere on the water, but you want more than just a beach, you know, you got to pick it wisely. Go to Rio de Janeiro versus the Bahamas, or you know, Nice, France versus Destin, Florida. You know, I mean, they're all nice, but if you want to take slow travel, you obviously have to have something that has got a lot of depth to the place. Okay, second, minimum of a week in each place. Any less than that, you don't get over the culture shock. It's really not slow travel. You've got to stay there long enough to where, like I said, your hotel room feels like a little, you know, nest, and you know you've walked enough, so you know how to get back to your hotel. You're feeling comfortable there. So it takes a minimum of a week, I think, in any place that you go in order for it to truly be slow travel. Three, research, research, research. Now, let me tell you, if you want to do a slow travel trip, you have to really do a lot of research. I mean, you have to get into, you know, everything about the food. Like, say, if you really like food and you're a foodie, I mean, you should Google the top chefs. You should Google everything about the different types of restaurants, whether they're fine dining or ethnic restaurants. You know, what's the specific types of cooking techniques? What are the cooking classes available? Food tours. I mean, you need to be on the internet, and as you're doing the research, make notes. Get you a journal, you know, for your trip, and you write this down. So you've done all the research on where you want to go, what you want to do, must-dos, things that you want to explore, things you want to ask your concierge about. But, you know, you have this list before you go. So once you get there, you can order your every day or construct your days to where you are doing the things that you read about that made you want to come to this place. So you can't just go somewhere and not have really done a lot of research, because you'll be at the mercy of the concierge, which, you know, is a lot of times not bad. But the bottom line is you need to have absorbed more of the consciousness of the place, of everything that you're wanting to do before you get there. I really recommend that. And I'm very high on YouTube videos. I did a whole podcast about them. I call them my secret weapon. But, you know, watch those videos. I mean, watch the videos on, you know, top sites to see. Watch the videos on, you know, top hotels. Watch the videos on how to shop or where's the best places to shop. Just watch videos. It is such a great introduction before you get to a place. It just helps you get ready to be in a different culture and to understand it. It's a really good tool. Okay, fourth, adhere to a daily routine. Now, this sounds, you know, like I'm a mother telling my children, brush your teeth. But the bottom line is try to incorporate your basic daily routine in terms of just personal things that you do while you're on your trip. I mean, I know a lot of people, they let it slide. Their hotel room is a wreck. You know, they forget to take their meds. They, you know, they just get, you know, kind of like disorganized and a little disoriented. If you take your bath in the morning and you do certain things in the morning, do that. Or if you take it at night, do the same thing. If you watch television every night before you go to bed or you read or whatever, maintain that same routine. Because that in itself kind of helps center you in a different place. And like I said, I don't want to be like a, you know, tell you what to do, but I'm just suggesting keep your room organized like you would at home. What I always do when I get to a new hotel room, I look at it and say, yeah, I like the space here, or this is just like a plan. And then I think, well, this is going to be my condo that I'm going to be living in for the next week or 10 days. So I'm going to make it just so. So I start arranging things like I want and everything, and I try to keep it that way. So when I come back from pounding the pavement, I go, oh, this is home sweet home, away from home. So, but that's, you know, I know it's small, sounds a little trite or whatever, but that's a tip that I suggest you really think about, you know. And if you say you like to burn candles, be careful. But if you do it at your house, bring a little travel candle. You'd be surprised. Just that glow and that smell is comforting. So try to adhere to a daily schedule that you do at home. Number five is catalog and document your experiences. I think this is really, really part of the whole slow travel byproduct. I mean, if you take the time to journal and just write down your thoughts, whether it's, I did this, I didn't like going there, the food was horrible, or I saw the prettiest pair of shoes I've ever seen, write all that down. You'd be surprised. When doing that, you'll start noticing other things more, and your mind will start expanding and seeing relationships. It's just marvelous. Then other things will come into your mind. Say if you've been struggling with a problem at home, or you don't know what you should do, this or that. Bingo, all of a sudden you figure out exactly what you want to do. when you're not focusing on it. It's just so, it's that's to me one of the great things about travel, because you get to get away from the environment, and so you're able to take a perspective that allows you to put all the pieces together where you're comfortable. And it takes that sometimes. It's really interesting how that works. But I'm a big believer in journaling. And in my particular case, all the journaling led to blogging, now the website, now the podcast. So you never know where it will lead you. Okay. Also, the photos. The photos, you know, are so great now. It's so easy to take a lot of photos, videos with your iPhone, whatever. And that's great. That's really, I think, a wonderful thing for the solo traveler to do, to really capture what you've done in this slow travel time. And take a lot of pictures. Take pictures of birds, you know, eating food, or, you know, whatever, just all kinds of different things. You'd be surprised if you have these apps, or now they're just in your phone. They ask you, do you want me to make a video of your day? Facebook, some of these videos that they come up with, that I have taken just random pictures, really just trying to take a cool picture, but thinking, oh, that was really kind of retarded or what. They put it together all together, and they go, and I'll think, oh, that looks so good. I mean, I didn't even think about that, but, you know, I mean, they're professional at doing this, and they mesh it with music and everything. But these photographs and these videos, you know, in the year, through the years, will be great memories for you. And you'll also be able to make sure that you bring back some of those things that you've learned, you know, like I talked about arranging flowers the way the Italians do, or they have a way of just picking something up that you think is nothing and doing it a certain way, and you just go, oh, that is so sweet. Photos in journaling, that's one of my tips. I think it's a great practice. Then take a lot of the unique local tours. You know, you can do a lot of wandering on your own and a lot of preparation, but there's something to be said for taking a walking tour that focuses on something. Like, I remember I took a Jack the Ripper walking tour in London.
Wow.
Because I had read a lot about Jack the Ripper, and they trying to figure out who he was, and was he an aristocrat, or was he really just a, you know, who was Jack the Ripper, and why, you know, has he remained mysterious? You know, there are always these events in history when people really can't figure them out, or there's a lot going on there that's being covered up. Well, that was a great trip, because we went to all the different places where he had lived and learned more about him and the psyche and the women that he had murdered and you know, all of his, the way he would approach things. You know, I don't think like, I mean, to me, people who murder, I mean, I don't get that. You know, I don't get shooting or stabbing or killing or anything like that. I just don't get it. Some people love that kind of stuff. They love to read about it and everything. So I thought, I want to take this. Maybe I can get it, you know. Well, I don't know how much I got it, but I thought the walking tour was excellent. And they did it at dusk.
Ooh.
So that was even
extra spooky.
Oh, yeah, it was even better. So there are a lot of really cool walking tours now and all over the world, especially in major cities where, you know, professors or people who are, you know, very educated in certain areas, they'll just start up their own specialty tours. And I find those very interesting. Then the food tours, I've talked about that on several of my podcasts, but they are great. I mean, you know, take those food tours, because you'll learn, first of all, a lot about the food. You'll just be stuffed when you're through. And they always blend it with the culture and the history and why people like to eat this way, why they eat rice in Charleston rather than spaghetti, you know, and that kind of thing. So bicycle tours, day trips, you know, take time to take some of those specialty tours. I think that they're worth the money, and they're quite enriching. Then in the evenings, you have to, you know, as when you slow travel, as a solo traveler, you have to figure out what you want to do in the evenings. Now, I'm not a partier, so I don't want to go out at night. You know, I'm married, and that doesn't interest me. But I don't want to stay holed up in my hotel room watching CNN or, you know, reading a book. I like to do things. So I typically will do the theater, or I'll go to a concert, or I'll go to some kind of dinner show that has some music, entertainment, or if there's something interesting that is going on, I'll go to it. And what I do is I always have the concierge. If I can't walk to it safely, I'll have the concierge arrange not only the tickets, but to get me there and back, so I know that I've got my logistics and my safety covered. And that's great, because it's just, you know, I know a lot of people think, oh, to go to the theater by yourself, that sounds awful, or to go to a folk dance and ethnic Turkish show in Istanbul and sit in this beautiful restaurant where they got all these performers doing this. That sounds so lonely. Let me tell you something. It is so cool. I mean, you have to get to yourself to this point. You know, a lot of people feel, they do feel lonely or a little like maybe I'm kind of weird, but no. Once you get to a point where you've shaken all that off, you have so much fun to observe everything that's going on. You really observe the show much more. And it's quite nice. There, you know, it's, I've talked about this on another podcast. When you are comfortable with being by yourself and you can still relax and enjoy yourself, that's a nice feeling. So in the evenings, you know, get with the concierge. Before you leave, have a list of the things that you want to do. Like when I was in Moscow, I definitely wanted to go to the Bolshoi Ballet. So that was like on my list of what to do in the evening. So make sure that you've got some things to do in the evening. I'm just thinking now in Singapore, one of the things I did, I took a beautiful night tour. In Singapore at night, oh gosh, Singapore is a gorgeous city. But at night, the way it's all lit up with its very interesting architecture and the stops that we made, etc., it was really, really cool. So, you know, line up things to do at night. Don't sit in that hotel room or feel like, you know, well, I can't. Or, you know, if you want to go party, party, but be safe. Okay, then number 8, do as the locals. When in Rome, do as the Romans, okay? If everybody's waking up late, don't get up and be ready to go at 7:30 or 8 because there's nothing open. You won't even get a cup of coffee. It's bad. So, you know, if they're all waking up late and staying up late, you're going to have to get into that rhythm. And if they all like to take lunch breaks that are 2 hours long, get into that rhythm because nothing's open. And I even, what I have found myself doing more and more is when I'm traveling places, especially if I'm staying there, you know, any length of time, I'll start even trying to dress like they do. Not that I'm doing it so purposefully, but you just kind of start doing it. It's really kind of a funny thing. So, you know, when you're in Rome, do as the Romans. You know, if they're all wearing sandals, go buy yourself a pair of sandals. You'll just feel more, you know, like in it. Okay, then that leads me to connect with the locals. You know, try to talk to people. I mean, I love to talk, so I kind of It's just so much fun for me. So I love to ask questions. So if I'm in a shop and I start talking to the shopkeeper, especially if there's something special about the shop, I'll want to know about her and why she did this and everything like that. But the more you can talk to locals, there's something about that that makes you really gain from the trip. And I know when you're traveling solo, if you don't talk to people, especially days on end, that's not healthy. So make a point. Plus, there are all kinds of activities now. They've got like meet-up groups. I've never done it, but there are all kinds of different things that if you go on the web that are offered in different places where you can connect with the locals. There's like a whole website, several websites. If you want to eat at somebody's home local, they'll invite you over. And some people eat all their meals that way. But you know, connect with the locals, because that's, you know, that is an aspect of slow travel that I think that you have to do in order to really be absorbing what you need to absorb by this type of travel. Then the last, no fast food. Now, I know that's pretty strong, but that's in the literal sense and in the state of mind or the philosophy. I think if you're doing slow travel, you can always do fast food when you get home, and try to do things where you really are absorbing the experience rather than the experiences. And like I've said a couple of times in the podcast, it's quality over quantity. You know, I know, like when I was in Venice, or I've seen a lot of tours where they say, oh, well, we'll go a half a day in Murano and a half a day in Burano. These are two little outlying islands. Murano focuses on all the magnificent glass blowing, and then Burano is into the lace making and the linens, etc. Well, I spent a whole day in each one, and probably could have gone back another day. Even though they're small, all the different shops, the restaurants, they're beautiful. They're colorful. They're both different from each other. And you don't want to just go there fast. It's just awful when they just take you to one of the glass blowing factories and you see the glass blowers, and then they take you through what you can buy, the shop, and then you're out of there. That's just terrible.
That would feel like a hustle through.
It is a hustle. That's what I'm saying. And that's, you know, these people spend their whole lives, generations and families, blowing glass and making these beautiful things. There's so many things to see and to appreciate. So, you know, slow down. I think it's much better than, you know, fast. So no fast food when you're slow traveling. And that's literally and in the mindset. So I'm going to end with a slow travel manifesto.
Wow.
That was written by Elena G. Olando, I think that's her name. She created the Zadie website. And this is interesting. This is a fashion website. She also blogs about travel and different things. She's into the whole slow movement. And she's taken it into her fashion creations about, you know, being well done, being sensitive to the environment, local, trying to source local manufacturers and products, and just she's got a real young and current outlook on a lot of things. But her manifesto reads like this: slow travel invigorates and elevates our level of curiosity about our communities at home and throughout the world, reinvigorating our consciousness that every corner of its beautiful expanse possesses novelties and intricacies worth saving. And I think that that really does sum it up. I mean, when you take things slower and when you are really connected and engaged, that's life. And it's important to approach life this way when you can, as often as you can. I mean, we have to be realistic. I mean, we can't always savor everything all day long. We won't get anything enough done, okay? But, you know, that's the slow travel mindset. That's the slow travel lifestyle mindset. And it's something that we all should strive to understand and do, like I said, as much as we can.
Whether your trip is fast travel or slow travel, you gotta pack. A packing list might help. You can get your own copy of Astrid's complimentary packing list. Just go to astridtravel.com, download the packing list. It's right there on the front page. Also, in this post for the podcast episode on Astrid's website, there's also the packing list is available on that page as well. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, SoundCloud. We're making a special call. If you are enjoying what you are hearing, please give us a rating. It would really help the show. We hope you are inspired to try things solo and try it slow. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week on Solo Travel Talk.
Thank you for listening to Solo Travel Talk. Follow Astrid on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. To learn more about Astrid or solo travel advisors, visit our website, astridtravel.com.